it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
13-9, Super Bowl 40. Some notable games in Pittsburgh football lore, and ones that get rekindled this weekend. One right here in Pittsburgh, and the other just down the road in Morgantown. And I want to open it up to a vibe check from you this morning on either game. Steelers and Seahawks on Sunday, Pitt, West Virginia tomorrow. You can chime in on both games if you want. You know the number, 412-928-9370, to join the conversation. It's Donnie Football with you on 93.7 The Fan from now until 2 p.m. Austin Bechtold, the one we call City Limits, is behind the glass. Our thoughts continue to be with Joe. He made the trip back up to Buffalo last night to be with his family this weekend. They have a matter going on. So you were stuck with Austin and me for the next 4 hours, but we have some friends stopping by. Your calls, obviously, at 412-928-9370. Nick Farrell, executive producer of Blue and Gold Nation, he checks in at 10:30. Nathan Breisinger gives us a Pitt viewpoint at 11:30. He covers the Panthers for Pittsburgh Sports Now, so we have the backyard brawl covered from both sides. And then our usual Friday suspects will join. Ray Fittipaldo at 11, Nick Costos at noon, Bob Walk at 1. We have ourselves a Bechtold breakdown at 12:30 and picks at 1:30. Your calls at 412-928-9370 to hop on the Fan Hotline, which is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. So that's a little rundown. That's off the top, brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding. So you know what's coming on today's show. It's a Football Friday, and it is a loaded Football Friday. Two big games in the area this weekend. We have a Steelers home opener upon us Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m., Acrisure Stadium. We have Fan Game Day live at 9 a.m. from Rivers Casino with myself, Mark Cabali, Jason Mackey. And the weather is supposed to be perfect on Sunday. So if you are going down to tailgate the game, go into the game, or maybe go to one of the nearby watering holes, it should be a great day for that. The Backyard Brawl, we are under 30 hours away from the 108th edition of that game, this time in Morgantown. We have it for you tomorrow, right here, 3:30 kickoff, pregame coverage beginning at 12:30 on The Fan. I'm going to give my thoughts on both games, how I feel going into them. If you want to share what's on your mind, you know the number to join in on the fun. We will start with Steelers and Seahawks on Sunday. And I'm feeling pretty confident going into this game. I don't see a blowout. The Steelers sit right now as about a field goal favorite. Aaron Rodgers has a chance for some history in this game as well. With one touchdown pass, he will tie Brett Favre for fourth all time. With two, he will pass him. And he sits at 507 right now. I think Rodgers gets there, and I don't think he makes himself sweat much on it. I think he does it in the first half. I think by the time that game is going into the locker room, Aaron Rodgers is the fourth all-time touchdown pass leader in the NFL. He can also move into the top six among all-time passing yards with about 250 on the day. He is currently within striking distance of Phillip Rivers. So a few historical footnotes for Rodgers going into the weekend. We also have ourselves a DK Metcalf revenge game brewing. He started his Steelers career with four grabs over 80 yards against the Jets. I think this week is the first touchdown. I am buying in. I am drinking the Kool-Aid this week for DK Metcalf. It seems too obvious to say he will score a touchdown, and it makes me feel like it won't happen, but I am going to say it does anyway. The offense has me feeling good. Probably naive of me, but it's hard to be upset after you see the offense put up 34 points in week one. We have been so hungry and so deprived of good quarterback play, and we have seen that so infrequently over the last 5 years. Last Sunday was a lot of fun. It was fun for the offense, not for the defense. It was the opposite for those guys. I'm not predicting a complete turnaround in this game and a shutout performance or anything like that, but it does have to be better, and it's really not an option. Terrell Austin said yesterday, oh, you'll occasionally have a stinker like that. Well, Terrell, your defenses and Mike Tomlin's defenses seem to have those more often than you would like, a lot more often. In fact, you go back about a half season, the last 8 or 9 games this defense has played, they are giving up about 27 points per game. That's unacceptable. But they face Sam Darnold and the Seahawks on Sunday, and I don't respect Sam Darnold too much as a quarterback. I will let Austin give his thoughts in a few minutes. I know that he is higher on Sam Darnold than I am. I thought last season was a product of him playing for a great offense and a great offensive mind like Kevin O'Connell, and less about his actual ability. I'm not saying he can't beat you, but he has proven he's done that before. But I think he's a pretty average player, and he's mostly one-dimensional. The game the Seahawks played last week was like a Mike Tomlin dream scenario, a defensive slog against the 49ers. Darnold had 150, no touchdowns, no picks, and was 16 for 23 in the game. They also didn't run the football well. Zach Charbonnet had 12 for 47 and a touchdown. Kenneth Walker, 10 attempts for 20 yards. So the Steelers and Seahawks had something in common in week one. Those numbers very similar to what Jalen Warren and Kenneth Gainwell were able to do. Jaxon Smith-Njigba is the big playmaker in that offense right now. Neither running back scares me a ton. The quarterback doesn't scare me a ton. Cooper Kupp, if this was like 2020, he would scare me a lot, but it's 2025. He looked old last week in that game against the 49ers. Then again, I, like a lot of us, pushed down on the Jets offense all week last week, and they led the game in every statistical category except for the score, and outside of a fumbled kickoff, probably would have won that game outright. I don't think the Seahawks will be all that good this season. I think they are a last-place finisher in the NFC West. Of course, the 49ers seemingly have a new injury every single day, so maybe that helps out Seattle. But I don't think they are facing all that great of a football team on Sunday. They need to take care of business here. The Steelers do have something else pretty big going for them, and that is something they didn't have going for them in years past. If they get in a situation where the offense has to put up points, if they get in a shootout-like game, I actually have confidence the offense can keep up. But I don't expect a high-scoring game like we saw last week. The Seahawks have a good secondary, but pay attention to the injury updates. Multiple guys there dinged up, and I mean key players. Devin Witherspoon, Julian Love. They also drafted the big safety, Nick Emenwori, who has not practiced all week. Too many things here seem slanted in the Steelers' direction. So I like them in this game. Something like, I don't know, 24-14 in that ballpark. We will get to our picks later. I will let Austin give his thoughts in a few minutes, but I want to take some calls here at 412-928-9370. Your thoughts going into Steelers and Seahawks. We will start with Tim in the North Hills. What's going on, Tim?
Thank you for taking my call, and I agree with most of what you're saying here. Again, I'm one of the early true believers in Aaron Rodgers once I heard he might be becoming a Steeler. And I just think he's still underrated how great his career has been and how that can translate in not just this year, but probably at least another year coming. And I do believe that, you know, he has transcended, made the Steelers a true contender. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot more games like we did like last week. In other words, somewhat of shootouts where our offense dominates and where, in essence, the quarterback wins the game for the first, you know, for the first time that we've seen in ages. So, again, I just want to put it out there that I think the Steelers were tremendous long shots going into the season for not just winning a playoff game, but going any further. I definitely think there's a true possibility we could advance pretty far in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't mind games where the quarterback has to win them, Tim. I mean, we saw that how many times over the near two-decade career of Big Ben where he just kind of had to put the team on his back and win some games. I don't mind that happening. I don't want to see it have to be necessary all that often because that means that Mike Tomlin's billion-dollar defense is not doing its job. That tells me that a defense that has a price tag of $158 million next to it isn't stopping anybody. And that's unacceptable. The last few years, it's been more acceptable when you see what the offense has and what they're working with to see those ugly games where the offense can only put up 14 or 16 points and the defense has to save them. Because of how much more is on that side of the football. And don't get me wrong, there's going to be games where that really doesn't matter. Lamar Jackson has seemingly figured out what the Steelers' defense presents him now. Just reference the last two games that the teams played against each other. And also, a game against Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Or even Joe Burrow. Yeah, the defense will take its lumps, and that's okay. If that is a game where Aaron Rodgers has to win it for you, that's perfectly fine with me. 412-928-9370. Scott is in Moon. What's up, Scott?
Hey, Donnie. I'm actually out driving. I'm on the south side. But no problem. Couple things. Number one, I lived out in Seattle in 2005 when the Steelers played the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. And I was with my ex-wife, my now ex-wife's family, and honest to God, I felt like I was on Exile Island. I mean, I was the lone Steeler fan in the whole house. And let me tell you, it was brutal. I think I like the creativity the Steelers are doing on their offense. Bottom line, they need to button up their defense because, as you said, it is unacceptable. And I just want to get your thoughts. I'll take your comments off the phone. But real quick, do you? I kind of get the feeling in my gut and in the back of my head that this is a trap game. Like, I have a feeling that something weird's going to happen and we're going to get caught off guard and, you know, I mean, I'm hoping that's not the case, but it just seems to line up, especially with all the injuries Seattle has, and everything. It lines up like a trap game. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on, but
yeah, Scott. I mean, I appreciate the call. The Steelers could absolutely lose. Don't get me wrong there. I just feel pretty good about them in this game. The vibes do feel pretty high after what we saw the offense do, and you have to think that the defense, you know, it's the home opener. There's going to be some more energy in that building. Those guys should be a little bit more juiced up just automatically by default that they will get the job done. But they also haven't fared all that well in home openers. It's kind of been checkered the last few years. You know, they win a game against the Chargers last year. That was a fun one, but think about the opener in 23 against the 49ers. That game was over with about 10 minutes to go in the third quarter. Realistically, it was over before that, but the nail in the coffin was a long touchdown run from Christian McCaffrey. They've had openers against the Raiders in recent years where Derek Carr lights them up. So, yeah, the energy, you would think, should get the whole team going, should get the defense especially going after a rough start against the Jets in week one. But the possibility is always there that the Steelers could lose a game. I mean, we've all been fans of this team and have followed this team for way too long to really ever think they're going to just roll in and waltz all over a team. So if we are walking away from that game on Sunday around 4:15, and we had just witnessed a Seahawks 24-21 win, that will be far from the most shocking thing I've ever seen. Austin, some of your quick thoughts on the Steelers and Seahawks matchup on Sunday.
Yeah, the biggest thing for me, Donnie, is how does this defense respond? What do they do after getting shelled for another game in a row? Because I'm continuing off of what last season was and how it ended, because the defense picked up right where it left off. So for me, it's going to be what happens when you get back into your own home stadium. You face a Seattle offense that has some new pieces, and just like you, a new quarterback. It didn't seem to affect the Steelers' offense humming on all cylinders. But Seattle, it seemed like it's taking a little bit of time to be able to get into a flow and get into a rhythm. So I want to see, what does T.J. Watt do? What does Cam Hayward do? And how do they take back the absence of Deshaun Elliott with Peppers, Chuck Clark? What does that look like? My eyes are singularly focused on the defense. I know a lot of eyes are on Aaron Rodgers and what he's going to look like. Obviously, first game at home for Rodgers. But for me, how does this defense bounce back from an atrocious performance?
412-928-9370. That's the number to join the conversation. You can also text us at that number, which is brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. The other big game this weekend is tomorrow afternoon in Morgantown, West by God, Virginia. Pitt, WVU, the backyard brawl. Pitt is a touchdown favorite right now. It is Pitt -7 at last check. I told Doran and Adam this earlier, though. I have a weird feeling about this game. You know, we just had a call saying, I got a weird feeling that Seattle will come in here and beat the Steelers on Sunday. Yeah, it could absolutely happen. I think that it's totally possible that Pitt is on upset alert tomorrow. I don't think they will lose the game, but weird things happen when these teams meet up. And the spread doesn't always matter. It really is a throw the record books out the window type affair. I mean, the whole rivalry for a generation of fans has been fueled by Pitt winning a game in which they were 4 touchdown underdogs. So I'm sorry if I'm not completely sold on a dominant Pitt win tomorrow afternoon. I would love to see it. Would absolutely love to see it. And that should happen. But it doesn't mean it always will. West Virginia is coming off an embarrassing loss. They lost to Ohio last week. Not Ohio State, Ohio. The Bobcats. Respect the Mac. They have multiple injuries in their backfield. Jaheim White, probably their best player on offense, certainly their best running back. I also don't know if Nico Markiel is somebody that throws fear into an opposing defense or a defense of Pitt's caliber. A touchdown and a pick this season through two games, just over 400 yards. I know that Pitt hasn't played the stiffest of competition, but Eli Holstein has 8 touchdowns already. They definitely, Pitt, that is, has the upper hand at QB with Eli Holstein. And they absolutely have the playmakers' advantage over WVU. With multiple guys in that offense around or behind Holstein. Scott McKillop, the Pitt Panthers legend, who had a monster performance in that 13-9 game, he joined the morning show about an hour ago, and I thought he made a great point with those guys. He said, West Virginia is the team with nothing to lose here. Pitt has something to lose. They have a lot to lose in this game, given how the season has started. And remember how last season went once Pitt lost a game, everything pretty much unraveled. West Virginia has a whole lot to gain. You think anybody in that fan base will care about the Ohio loss if they beat Pitt tomorrow? And let's think about the guy coaching WVU, Rich Rodriguez. His legacy at West Virginia isn't about all of the games that he won with Pat White and Steve Slayton. It's about the one he lost to Pitt when he had a chance to take the Mountaineers to a national championship game. So I would think tomorrow means a whole lot for him. He can say it doesn't. People, athletes say that all the time. Even though it's not knocking Pitt from an appearance in the title game, it's a big opportunity for WVU to go out on a high note in this series for now. So I think Pitt wins the game, but I think it's a dogfight. I'm not sure of an exact score right now. And even though right there that kind of gave up my pick for later in the show, I think it's a much more difficult game than what some Pitt fans may think it is. Austin, some of your backyard brawl thoughts.
Yeah, Donnie, I think being at West Virginia, this game is going to be a lot closer than people think. Like, the line continues to creep up at 7.5. WVU was embarrassed against Ohio. Like, if you're West Virginia and you get Rich Rod back and there's excitement and, yes, you have all these new players, you cannot lose at Ohio. So if they lose this game to Pitt, West Virginia's season is going to completely spiral when the rubber meets the road and they have to face the heart of Big 12 competition. So I think ultimately WVU does lose, but they do keep it close. It's more of a field goal type of game.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.